What you are about to hear constitutes an episode of a documentary produced by myself, André Castro, about people who live and use boats inside London. The interviews and field recordings were collected during the winter and spring of 2007. Thank you to all of those who participated and collaborated in this project. Good listening. In this episode, you will hear the interviews with Jim Marshall and Juliet Rogers.
Starts to leak, they repair it. Meanwhile, there's a boatman dying who has a story to tell. And if he hasn't told the story, or film, audio, or whatever, then the story is lost. Forever. And you just have to be a bit careful that he isn't actually a museum piece. But he will probably, because it's his working environment, he will know things about the way the canal was built, maintained, and so on, and we'll be able to leave things for future generations about working in the winter, about all sorts of boats on strike and boats that sank and horses that got drowned and all sorts of things like that, which are they interesting? I guess they are. And it's interesting that also that it hasn't changed, the psychology of it hasn't changed. Since Dickens came up here, Charles Dickens came up here in a boat from Regent's Canal Dock, Limehouse now, on the Thames. He went all the way to Little Venice up there and wrote a book about it. And in it he makes remarks that show that things haven't changed, that little boys would stand on bridges and throw bricks at the boats underneath, and we on them and all sorts of things like that. And he explains the psychology. That's just the same today. They're not worse today, they're just the same. But the psychology of it is that when a sort of a no-hoping street lad, lass, usually lads, have to stand on a bridge, they feel superior to the people underneath. But they know inside themselves that they're not superior, because the person underneath is actually a skilled artisan who's steering a boat, loading, blah, 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 maintaining it, working a horse. But they feel superior. The only way they can show their sense of superiority is by pissing on them or throwing bricks at them as they go underneath. And Dickens writes quite a lot about it. I mean, he's absolutely right. It was harder work then. It was harder work because you only got paid according to what you did. Whereas now most of us get paid wages and we can sit and drink coffee all day and still get the same money. Whereas they would have been so much for each ton they carried and for each mile they carried it. So what if the weather was really bad, they'd get paid. And if the weather was just merely bad, frozen, then they got paid and it was dangerous, slippery and blah, like that. And if it was a nice sunny day, they could sit there smoking a pipe and go along. Or blow themselves up, as they did in the bridge here, in the park. Blow-up bridge. I get crucified for getting the date wrong. I think it was 18... I'm really getting it in, Tom, if this is. 1884, I'm going to say. At Macclesfield Bridge in Regent's Park, round the corner, a barge, his name I forget, with a skipper called Boswell, was loaded with kerosene and gunpowder and decided to light his pipe and smoke. Of course, the noise was heard all over London. And there was a wonderful front page of the Illustrated London News, an engraving showing bits of body all flying through the air and men pulling bits of body out of the canal and so on. So that's called Blow-Up Bridge. It's really Macclesfield Bridge, but the way it's been put back together is sort of all back to front, the pillars. And there's a tree there with a big scar up it, a London plane. And the scar dates from the explosion. So therefore the tree is, what, 116, 123 years old, if it was 1884. So that's a big tree now with a scar. You'll see it if you walk through, or just through the bridge on the right.
And perhaps, but go back to the thing of the kids standing on the bridge,
yeah,
and the work that you do here in the Pirate Castle. You work mainly with kids in here?
Mainly with kids. It was built for kids, yes, the whole concept.
And what do you try to do? Do you try to bring kids into the canal, into the water, or what?
It's quite easy to be pompous about that. I just generally enjoy myself and have a good time. I'd really like to tell you I do it because I want to improve kids and give them a better chance in life. In my specific case, that's not particularly true. I have a really good time when kids ask me questions. Kids who play football in those 5 square metres over there. And we take them out of London and point out that milk comes from cows and not Sainsbury's. And that's a kingfisher, and that's a heron, and little simple things. And they steer the boat, and they work the locks, and they cook for themselves, and they generally have a good, productive, educational, fun, self-improving, self-confidence-boosting experience for several days and nights. And getting to know their friends from the estate, and chilling out on the bunks, which is one of their favourite things. I guess we do a certain amount of good because most of the groups come again. So that, and they don't have to. They just say, yes, we'd like to come again. So you know you've done something right. And you know you've done something right, or my predecessors have done something right. When I get in a taxi outside here and I'll ask a taxi driver how much to Paddington. And they say, do you work there, mate? And I say, yes. They say, well, it's free then. And this has happened to me six times. And it's £10 in a taxi to Camden. And the answer always is, I used to go there when I was a boy. My son used to go there. And he learned so much, or it kept me off the streets, or all sorts of good things. So, whilst it was sort of started to do that, to get kids off the streets, and whilst it still does do that, in some ways, it's a lot bigger than any of that. It's made a sort of community of people who look back to their childhood, and they were with fondness. If I wear my pirate T-shirt in the street, people in their 40s and 50s will come up to me and say, I used to go there. Keep it up, mate, you're doing a really good job. And I said, well, I haven't been there very long. It's been there 40 years, and by count, St. David's had the vision that kids could make kayaks, have a clubhouse on a barge, learn to use their hands, and generally get self-confidence. And we still do that. So Giles does that with kayak club, canoeing club, several nights a week for several ages and abilities. And then we put the kayaks on these boats and take the kids away with kayaks so that they can paddle behind us or in front or whatever and stop for lunch and then do a bit more and then stop in the evening. And then we all work like crazy doing that. And then we ask them what they enjoyed most, and the answer is always chilling out on the bunks. So you think, well, you could have stayed here and we could have locked you in, switched the lights off, plugged in your mobiles, because they text each other across the boat. They will, as close as we are now, half a metre, they will text each other, and I always think, who's paying for that? But they are unaware of it, and they will text things like, pass the ketchup. You know? But since they come, and since their parents came, and their grandparents came, it's got to be a very good place. And it's got a good feel about it. And it's going to double in size very shortly. And there's going to be more full-time staff. And the place will come even further to life. The building is built on Gilby's foundations, opened by Robin Knox Johnson, or cornerstone by Robin Knox Johnson, and opened by Prince Charles. So when it's doubled in size and we've got another boat, we'll need to get a celebrity to open it. So if you're a famous recording artist by then...
I think so.
It's probably, they probably want a footballer or somebody like that. Mm-hmm. But in another year or two, sort of, Ronaldo will be dead. We probably... Anyway. Oh, I've got to be a bit careful, you Portuguese, aren't you? I mustn't say anything.
It's all right,
But you know what I mean. It will probably, yeah, I don't think that won't matter to the kids. They'll just want the star of their team, won't it? So, whoever that will be in another year's time when that opens. Mourinho still be here? No, they'd crucify a Chelsea man here.
But it's also, the working with kids in here, I think it's also a way of preserving that legacy that you were talking previously about.
Yeah.
The craftsmanship. Of course, they're not working in the canals like boaters used to do, and they don't get to learn that much. But perhaps it's a beginning, and it's curiosity, and they tend perhaps to appreciate this area and to.
I think so. There are so many different approaches to working with young people. I mean, there is the person who at the age of 10 decides he's going to be a social worker, youth worker, and takes all the papers and everything and the experience. And is probably as good as you will get. And then there are one or two of us here whose only qualification is having lived a long time and being police checked and are quite happy to have a job. At all, but it's actually a very nice job, and yes, it is. It's very easy to be infectious about something that you love yourself. It's so easy. If you like fast cars, it must be very easy to sell fast cars. So, this is pretty good. Look at it out there. How deep is that? You've no idea. And people will sit there. There's a Buddhist monk who sits opposite, and he just looks in the water all day. There's a classical violinist who just sits there, and an alto sax player who plays some brilliant jazz and gets all the echoes under the bridge of the Sunday. So just the very near being near that water, that it's actually only 3 feet deep. But it could go to the centre of the Earth, couldn't it? We don't know. I know. It's just... what's happening in there, in that water? There are fish in it. There are eels in it. And we've got geese breeding on the end.
And do you think that presence of water inside a city like London, does it change it a lot?
It calms it. It's not only got wonderful reflections, it's a great healer. That's... A friend of mine once said, the only type of person you sitting aside of the canal and looking in the water is a lonely neurotic. It's not quite true, but there are a few lonely neurotics who will sit there. And I've had people who ask, can we sit on the bench? You know, because we're on private property. Can I just sit on the bench? And they'll sit there for an hour or two and look at the water. They won't even feed the ducks. They just look in the water and think. And then stand up and say, thank you very much. That did me the power of good. And they've done nothing. They've just had the water. So you can have that argument, earth, fire and so on. A fire will certainly clean you. Better than that will, the water. But then people will look into a fire and get healed. With their thoughts as they're moving any of the natural elements. I can just sit there and think and be a bit blank, actually. I'm not sure that I'm thinking how to change the world. I would just look at it. And then I look at my watch and go, golly, I've been here 2 hours. What have I done? But I feel quite good now. And it goes places as well. It's taking things. It's transporting things in a very economic way relative to the road and the rail. Once described as liquid history. So you can just, wherever you start, where the Thames was described. But that's attributed to two different people. So look, John Buchan and Churchill. But it's just coming from somewhere. Every molecule that's coming here, apart from the rain that's raining now, has come from the top of the Chilterns. And it's passed all sorts of things on its way. All sorts of... I mean, goodness. You can write a book about what's going on underneath there. I'm a little molecule, started in the Chilterns, finished up in London. Or actually didn't finish in London, went out through the lock in London, down the Thames, turn right, and bingo, I'm suddenly in Australia. You know, you want to be that silly, but I mean, it's on its way to Australia, some of this. Takes rather a long time. It's not exactly moving very fast, is it? It's moving according to when the lock is filled and takes 16,000 gallons of water into it. It's totally man-made. We asked a little boy the other day what was the difference between a canal and a river. And he said, we dug the canals and God dug the river. So that's about it. It's all right. Have you done any boat moving on a boat?
Kayaks.
Oh, right.
And,
you do realise you have to pay for this by coming here. You should have kept quiet.
Yeah, and I lived in a catamaran for a week or two in Corsica. Yeah, it's very nice. Just rocking.
Yes, the motion. It's very...
The motion, yeah. Very good to fall asleep with it.
I know old people who born and bred on boats, who's actually got a house right at the side of the canal, where they cook and watch television and everything. But they sleep on the boat. Okay. Even 85 years old, they will sleep on the boat because they always have, and they need that sort of the comfort of the womb almost in the sack of water. They wouldn't dream of sleeping in the house, which is actually much more comfortable.
I just want to ask you, how did you get into boats?
Ah. Well, it depends whether you... Oh. I know, but it's sort of... It's a good story for men. It's not a very good story for people. I had a friend who had a boat on the river in Reading. And one night there was a party on there, and there were 53 boys and one girl. And we had a very good party. She didn't, but we all did. And then I went next day and said to my friend, how can I get a job on your boat? And he said, well, you just got one. You can start now. And he said, if you push the tiller to the right, it goes to the left. And you push it to the left and it goes to the right. And you push that, it goes forwards. And you pull it, it goes backwards. And you press that, it goes faster. But don't go from forwards to backwards when it's going fast. And I've got to go now. And I had 70-something feet of boat and 50 old ladies who wanted to have a party. So that seemed like quite a good idea. So I didn't go back to university, really, that didn't seem. And then the next day we took the boat somewhere near Oxford where we went on a canal that was built for boats of this size. So sort of 200 years old, nearly, the Oxford Canal. And there were still horses and boats and barges and so on working around the area. And a lot of old people who were direct descendants of the people who were the first workers on the canal 200 years earlier. So I'd step back in time. And it was quite comfortable. And most of the people were very friendly. And so there were things that I soon realised I had to do to be accepted, which was to actually work the hours and as hard and as efficiently as they did. But most of them have gone. I mean, it's a euphemism for saying they're dead, really. I mean, most of them are dead now. And most of those who are left were actually too young to have ever done it, really, because it stopped commercially about 40 years ago. So anybody who did it, even as a boy, would have to be in their mid-late 60s now. There were odd little stragglers still carried on. So... That was quite a sort of step back in time, and then the middle classes started writing about it. The English middle classes started writing about this secret world of the water gypsy. And they were the sort of people who could write articles in The Observer and so on, and The Guardian, who would get, Manchester Guardian then, who would actually get their middle class friends to come along. One of whom was Viscount St. David's from here, of course, who had his little boat and his house just round the corner, saw this opportunity with young people, but wrote a couple of books. One is still a classic on... I forgot what it's called, but it's basically called something like Basic Boat Handling. And he travelled all over England in a small boat. And he wrote another book, which is unfortunately out of date, which is called something like Canalside Pubs of England. So most of those pubs in those days didn't have food, and most of those pubs today don't have beer. So it's sort of changed quite a lot, and a lot of the pubs will have silly names now, you know, things like the Rat and Parrot. And when they used to just be called The Navigation. So his two little books were quite a treasure, and he spoke a lot in the House of Lords about the waterways. And he'd go to the House of Lords by boat. He'd come from here and get one of the boys to take him No, from his house, just up the canal. A boy would paddle up and he'd take him down to the lock so he could go to Camden Station and then go to Westminster and claim his £120 a day or whatever it was, attendance money. But he did talk. He did talk very much in the House of Lords about the whole waterway thing. So you sort of say, was he a curse? Should you? It's that old question. If you find something you love, should you tell other people? Because they will certainly change it for you. So this has changed from the early mid-60s, when I knew the name of every boat, pleasure boat, to something like 30,000 with licenses now. And most of them keep them. Which is all right as well. You know, I'm not knocking it. It's just that they just come along with their painted biscuit tins, and they're probably retired, which is still all right, and then they will go on a holiday around England whilst they're still young enough to do it. It seems all right. The kids have gone to university, they bought the car, paid the mortgage, buy the boat and go around England and meet other old people. So you've got loads of old people going around at 4 miles an hour, bumping into each other. Which is sort of all right, it's just not how it was. And most of the traditions have been lost. But that's supposed to be progress, isn't it? It was pretty good when I found it, but you have to... Well, I can't make it go back, can I? I can't make anything go back. I've got a bus pass now. I'd rather be younger and not have a bus pass. But I got one and I use it. So, having a boat pass is okay. And that's the reason I asked you if you'd been on a boat is because you actually... That is really the actual way to do... To sort of... Anybody... If you're ever going to sell a boat to anybody, you just sort of start the engine for them and give them the tiller or the wheel and say, would you like to take it round the corner? And then you've got them. The boat is sold. It's partly a power trip, particularly for men. And if it's got a nice galley, you sell it to women. And I know that's sexist. But there's that thing about actually being in charge. Well, you know, if you steer a kayak, you're totally responsible, aren't you? Nobody can sort of... They can shout a bit more to one side or the other, but basically you're in charge of whether you're going to go over the weir or what you're going to do. So it's a bit... And there's a power thing for men, this great long thing in front of them. That's every man's dream, is to have a big long thing in front of him that he can put in a tunnel, isn't it?
But also the boat is... Something about you don't have to have a place, you can go anywhere with it.
This is true, yes. You can absolutely... Well, it's not... Yeah, I just said it's true, it's not. It sort of was true. You can go anywhere, more or less, for 14 days. You can be on a perpetually cruising licence. But most boats have a mooring somewhere. A home base. I mean, you can't moor over there because there's nothing to put rings or spikes or anything in. And you wouldn't want to be over there anyway because the kids would throw things at you if you were down below. And if you stuck spikes in, you'd probably hit the national grid and blow yourself up. There's 600,000 volts, I think that's right, going into towpath. If that lady knew who's walking along there now with her apple, she'd walk a bit faster, wouldn't she? Yeah. And there's water going in that pumping station there to cool the pipes down. They're on their way to Birmingham. And it overflows down there. And then again, it keeps in relays all the way. So the towpath itself is serving another function now. It's quite good in the morning standing here. If you get a nice sunlit day, with the reflections. And people walking backwards and forwards. And that grinning idiot over there, he can't hear. See, he's one of our success stories. He's been a naughty boy from time to time. But he's actually a great people person and a great boat handler. And when we had the chairman of British Waterways here the other day, I said to him, "So when you're going back to your base in central London, how did you get here?" He said, "Taxi." I said, "Well, that's 45 minutes then, Tony. This lad opposite, Beau, will take you in this boat, and you'll be there in 35 minutes. And he looked at me and said, "I suppose just nearly 16, I think he's 16, just. And I'm wearing a jacket he gave me because he sort of, he saw I liked it. It's from Columbia. And he left it on the boat one day and I put it on and I didn't know it was his. And he said, "That's my jacket." So I said, "Oh." And I gave it back to him. And when I left here, it was wrapped up. So that's why when I come to Pirate, I wear his jacket. It's not waterproof, it's not. It's all right, it's Beau's jacket. So when the kids do things like that for you, he'll be around in a second. I'll be very surprised if he'll put his dog away and say, "What are you doing over there?" He's also on our committee. The chairman was mightily impressed. You could see him saying, thinking, that 15-year-old boy is going to steer this great big boat all around the bends, through a tunnel, and blah, 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 with lots of traffic. Well, fine then. So he and I sat at the front and talked about boys like Beau. Oh, he's also got boating certificates. We award national certificates here, and GCSEs in boat handling, and A-levels in boat handling, and I'm qualified to train teachers to award A-levels in boat handling. So we have courses here that are quite good. For the estate kids, they could get a GCSE in boat handling, which might be the only GCSE they ever get. But it might just be the one that shows they have another interest that might get them into a sixth form college or something or other. And if they get an A-level in the boat handling thing, it might just be it's a grade 4. So that actually gives them their 3 normal A-levels, say, plus one that shows they're interested in boats and blah, 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 and they can do things with people on boats. So it might just be the one that tips them into university. So it's a good thing to, it's all right. It's another interest, isn't it? And the guy who's interviewing them might have a boat on the canal as well, so they're off. Well, if there are 26,000 boats going around and 250,000 people more coming to visit the canal every year, most people can say, "I walked along the canal with my dog, my wife, or whatever, and it was very interesting. There were notice boards telling me the history, there were leaflets being given out, there were people. It's quite clean for a city centre. The water's only dirty because the mud underneath is brown." Mm-hmm. It's not actually dirty. I wouldn't drink it, but you can take a glass of it and look through it. But the floating stuff has gone.
It's quite a discovery. If I remember discovering, start walking through it. I was, wow, such a place exists inside London. And just this massive road.
Amazing.
Going over it.
The first time you discover it, it's quite amazing. And then when you discover that it's connected to over 2,000 miles of other canal, you know you can go from here to the very north of England, east, west, south, west, whatever. There's also a community of people, albeit the older people, but there's a community of people who will actually, you'll meet them in the southwest one day, and a couple of next year or two, you might meet them in the northeast, and they say, "Oh, you're the person I met so and so." How have you been keeping as a wife, etc., etc.? Where have you been? Oh, don't go there, it's horrible. The kids throw stones. Or just go another 100 yards so they can, you know... Now that it's not a working environment, they will actually say, if you go another half mile, there's a nice pub and a beautiful view, and nobody will disturb you. Sort of thing. Oh. Like travellers the world over. And it all now is not under threat, but British Waterways have lost a vast amount of money recently to the government incompetence. British Waterways are connected to...
In the early 80s because we already had formed a puppet company and were working with puppets, but it was touring. In other words, we had a lot of equipment with us, the staging and the lights and the sound and the puppets and the effects, and it was a lot of work moving this stuff about. So after 4 years of touring, we thought we would like to get a base, and initially we looked on land for an old hall or a space of some kind that we could convert into a puppet theatre. And the more we looked, the more we realised that this was just an impossibility. It was beyond our reach in terms of, well, mostly financially, but there didn't seem to be many such places available. And then we turned to the water and thought about the possibility of making a theatre on a boat. And that's, in fact, what we did. We searched the canal for about a year before we found a suitable vessel. It was an old Thames lighter originally, which means it was a working boat on the Thames and canal, mostly taking stuff from the docks onto the rivers and canal, smaller rivers and the canal. Things like timber and gravel and sand and other sorts of cargo. So it had no top on it, it was an open hull, and it had no engine. It was pulled by tugs on the river. It's what they call a dumb barge, because it doesn't have an engine of its own. Anyway, we found, with the help of some other waterways, people on the water, a suitable hull, and we had to have it strengthened and replated to quite a large extent to start with, and that had to be done with a yard, a barge yard, who were specialist welders and barge builders. So we did that, and that took place, and then we set about making it into a theatre. Well, it's taken us more or less ever since that time to improve it, and we did it gradually, bit by bit. At first it was really simple. We put in our staging, the stuff that we were touring with, so it was still a flexible setup, and the lights that we had. So we started like that, and then we were still getting touring dates, so we had to undo it all out of the barge and take it on tour sometimes. So that happened for a few years, until finally we got to the stage where we had a fixed setup in the barge, which was much better, and we were beginning to become established and audiences were coming in. Although the early years were very hard, it was often very few people coming. We started the shows in Camden Lock, in fact. Puppet Theatre Barge opened there in 1982, and we worked there until the late 80s, when we moved the barge to Little Venice, where we are now, and have been here ever since, apart from during the summer months when we tour. So we actually put an engine in the barge. So that's what we do now. Every year we go out of the canal system at Brentford, and we go upriver through Richmond and on up in the direction of Oxford. And we do that July, August, September and October, stopping at different places. And that's become the pattern of events now. So we have a summer schedule of shows when we go out to the countryside, and we spend the winter in Little Venice.
And while you're out in the summer, do you live on the barge? Or?
Yes, we do. We lived on this barge together with other puppeteers for about the first 10 or 15 years. And then Gren and I bought a second barge, which is much smaller than this, but it's fine for us too. Mm. And we live on that in the summer when we're touring. And we also use it occasionally in the winter months. And we keep that barge at Richmond. And that's a lovely old boat. It's an old one like this as well. This one was built, I think, in around 1929. And so is the other one. They're both steel hulls, working barges originally, built to work on the rivers. And they're suitable for the job that we use them for now. We've had moments of difficulty with this boat because it takes a lot of maintenance, as you can imagine. So it does have to go into the dry dock and get fixed from time to time. And it's old, so we have to keep our eye on the plating. And of course there are a lot of regulations about, you know, safety regs and so forth, we have to comply with, because we have public on board, we have a public audience coming on, so we get regular inspections, which is good, and it's made us gradually improve, and things have got more stringent over the years too, the regulations, you know. So that's hard, but has to be, yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask you, what do you think, well, what does it take you to, or did it take you to decide to live on a boat, or what do you think takes other people to decide to live on the water?
Well, it's definitely an alternative way of life. It's not for the people who are perhaps more conservative, you know, because there are always surprises coming at you all the time. And it's just a very different way of life. And it suits some people and not others, I would say. and I really like it. And I also love the fact that you can have, at times, an urban existence right in the centre of the city, but live on the water and enjoy everything that goes with that. I think one of the most important aspects for us is that you're always very close to the light or the elements. Very, very conscious of the weather, always. And the seasons as well. That's a big part of it. You really do become close to that. And I think I like that because a lot of people are unaware of if it's raining or if it's cold or, you know, sometimes an existence becomes rather not claustrophobic, but you lose a certain part of life which, if you live on the water, you can stay close to.
And inside a city, inside London, mm-hmm. do you think that this presence of water in some way does change the city, does do something to the city? Would it be the same city if it had its presence of water, either the canals or the river?
It's very important. I think people have always known that. Water is such an important element in our lives, important part of our lives. But that's why, from the beginning of time, most big cities are built on a river. They use it for transportation and, of course, for practical uses, and drinking water and so on, and for irrigation. But, OK, so that's not quite like that now, and certainly not the case with working boats. You don't see transportation going on nearly as much, although we find it absolutely ideal in our business. We've got a huge amount of stuff in that boat. We've got, you know, 55 seats, a huge amount of staging, and everything that goes with running the shows, and we can just untie the ropes and move the whole theatre cheaply. It's a great asset. It's much slower, but that's okay too. You know, I know people say time is money, but if you plan it, I think that you don't lose out. And I certainly feel that water in this is a huge bonus. You've got channels of oxygen, and you've got a lot of planting and growth around the waterways, and a bit of wildlife. So they're marvellous, have to be looked after.
Well, they're very different when you first started in the 80s.
Oh, I'll say. Yeah. Oh, the canal particularly. Hugely polluted. And there was a lot of debris in the bottom of the canal, you know. They have been dredged. They're looked after better. And they were very little used. They were like the backwaters and the back doors of... Now you see buildings facing onto the canal again, offices and even housing facing the canal, which is new because people really turned their backs on the canal 50 years ago and chucked their rubbish into it. But things have changed a good deal, and the Thames is much, much, much cleaner since we first started going up and down the Thames. That's improved hugely. That's great. I think people value the waterways now as a great asset and realise that they have to be looked after, and that costs money. But people use the canals for leisure, so they pay licences and so on. That helps. Yeah.
Is there a lot more people living now on boats or using boats?
There are. But we need more moorings on the canals. We need to create more... The British Waterways should create or allow more residential moorings on the canal, definitely. There's a great need for housing. People often turn to the waterways as an alternative way to live. As I was saying at the beginning, it doesn't suit everyone, but if you feel that you could cope with that way of life and you're practical, then it is a great way to live, definitely. But it's hard to find moorings, especially in central London, you know, and even in greater London. It's very hard. So I think there could be more moorings created, and I wish they would do that.
It's also freedom to have a boat, and you can go.
Yes.
Leave when you want to, and
yeah,
and go sort of where you want.
You can, yes. Just to move your whole house, as it were, just untie the ropes and go off is a great feeling. Yeah.
I don't know. Would you like to say anything else?
Well, not really. The only thing I can think of, perhaps, is that for us, it's been wonderful living and using the water as a way of life and a working way of life, because often it introduces people who would never come. They come because they want to see a show, they want to come to theatre, and it's something to do with children, something along those lines. And then they think, oh yeah, it's like a boat, that's cool. Let's do that. So perhaps people who wouldn't come to the water normally come through that way, they're introduced. And that's great, I think. Lots of school children come, brought by schools and by their teachers, and then teachers tell them a little bit about the canal and the old days on the canal and how they were used. And in reverse as well, it's good, because some people who like canals and boats think, well, let's go to the theatre. So we've got two fronts, really. That's quite an advantage for us. Two attractions.
Thank you.